Hi, welcome everybody to the Three Coaches Book Club. We've decided to put this podcast together because there's obviously a lot of books out there. And as coaches, we do read a number of those. And we've decided that, we'll have a review of a book and share some of the best bits from it. So you can decide whether it's something you want to do. So I'm Kevin Cope. I'm a coach. I coach primarily in the property arena, but I also coach with the Entrepreneur Circle.
I'm Sally Cope, not just Kevin's wife, but also I am a coach and mentor in property and business, particularly with wealth and talent dynamics.
Nice. And I'm Dominic Beechnow, head coach at the Property Investors Network. I've been in the coaching and mentoring field for about nearly 15 years. I worked out over 4,000 hours of coaching now. And this is a fantastic opportunity. I really love this idea that you brought to us, Kevin, because I love books and I love sharing them. And the best way to learn something is to share it. And so this is another great opportunity to do that. And we're starting with what I think is an absolutely fantastic book, The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. So, quick summary, Sally, what is a summary of The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks?
So I found this really interesting because it's exploring yourself, really, in many different ways. It talks about understanding yourself. He talks about the limitations, the limits that you have and where they come from. This sort of like the basic limits, but he also talks about the upper limit and the upper limit that we all put on ourselves, and again where that comes from. He goes on to then how you can address it, how you can overcome it, what you need to do in order to increase your upper limit and even get rid of it. And then he also talks about time. And how we spend our time. Mentioned something called Einstein time, which I'm not sure whether you've come across again, and about how we are actually in control of our time. He goes on also on to about relationships and how we can use all of these factors in relationships to help our own relationships, our relationships with our partners and our business relationships, and about understanding ourselves. And he also talks about how we can help this with children right from a very early age. It's a fascinating book that really makes you explore yourself and gives you understanding about why you have the limiting beliefs and the questions and maybe the challenges that you have and where they've come from.
Nice. That's a great little summary. Thank you, Sally. And it's not just about the conscious limiting belief, but it's also the subconscious limiting beliefs, which I find absolutely fascinating. We'll come back to that in a second. But Kevin, who is this guy and what gives him the right to talk to us about this stuff?
So he's been around for quite a while. He's a psychologist, a writer and a teacher. And he's authored over 35 books. So he kind of knows his stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. And he's American, isn't he?
We won't hold that against him.
Great. Okay. So there is a core concept around the upper limit problem, as he calls it, ULP, upper limit problem. And so that's one of the main core concepts that he focuses on. But there's so many golden nuggets throughout the book. What was one of the first ones that stood out for you, Kevin?
For me, it was the fact that everybody has a level. So no matter whether you're just starting out or how successful you are, everybody has that level that we get stuck at. And the idea, the concept of being in a box until you get to the zone of genius, when that was then described as a spiral. So you're out of the box, but you're just floating up through this spiral when you actually get into that top level.
Great. And so, Sally, what can you think of how you've experienced an upper limit in your own life?
It's the limiting belief that this was given as a child, really, where this is where you come from. This is what you're expected to do. I felt this very much at school because I come from a very working class background. And the school I went to wasn't a working class background school. So there was always that feeling that I was really at my upper limit on what I could do, and to keep that there was an upper limit about where I was at a class society and where I was in my school, in my school background. And to, I was always pushing my upper limit when I was at school.
Okay, and how do you think you held yourself back with the upper limit? What was it that you weren't fully self-actualizing?
I don't think I ever engaged fully in what I could do at school, because I always believed that I wasn't worthy of doing that because of the background that I had.
Really? Interesting. It's so difficult to see it in oneself, isn't it, Kevin?
Yes.
I read the book, loved it, and it's fascinating. But then actually, yeah, what changes can we make? And how can we discover our own upper limits? Because just reading it, we can't see ourselves, can we?
No.
We can't see it ourselves. And one of the bits that I found quite challenging was when you look to actually implement this stuff, the questions that you have to ask yourself. I think it's incredibly difficult to ask them of yourself. I think that's kind of where you need help, where the coach comes in, that can actually help you see that.
He talked about a Russian doll, didn't he? Like it's like Russian dolls. So you look at what your upper limit is, or what you think where you are, but actually that's only the outer. What your problem is, that's only the outer part, and then you have to ask the question and go to the next level down. So the smaller doll, and then ask the question again and keep going until you've got to the real core of it. I think that is what's really quite challenging to do to yourself.
That's the hard bit. It's relatively easy to do the first level, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then to go deeper on your own is very hard.
It's exploring why and what are the problems and why they're holding you back. And so he talks about subconscious. So as an example, someone might get a cold and lose their voice before going on stage and needing to give a presentation because they secretly, subconsciously don't want to, or are fearful, or very fearful of presenting in front of an audience. So it's not always, we're not always aware of it, we're not conscious of it, but actually our bodies will express it through illness, through accidentally having a car crash or something that we'll do, or something will happen in our lives which will enable us not to have to deal with that bigger problem that we're trying to overcome.
And then we feel relieved, don't we, that that's happened in a strange way. That means I can't do it. And you feel a bit guilty, but you feel like relieved that, that means I can't do it. Breathing.
Yeah.
And I think we can all think back to situations when that's happened, can't we? Which is quite scary, really.
Yeah. And I was coaching someone earlier today, actually, was talking about imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, isn't it, how that voice in your head talks you out or thinks, oh, look at all these other people. They're doing so well and they're so much more advanced than I am. And it's just all the small self, the fearful ego inside of us that's holding us back and keeping us safe in a way in this zone of fear that we're used to, because most people, about 75% of people, actually live in fear the whole time, don't they?
Yeah.
And actually it does take a lot of courage to step outside and become all that we can become, because that's also scary too. We could be so much more. It's such a brilliant concept, but there's so many great ideas in there. What's another idea that really stood out for you, well, either of you, Kevin or Sally?
I think that worry stops flow happening. Worry never sold anything, did it? I mean, we know that, but it's so comforting to actually do it, to actually worry, because it gives you some kind of comfort in a very strange way, but it actually completely stops you. Stops flow from just happening and things going on.
Yeah. And we get so conditioned by the media and our families, don't we, Sally?
Absolutely. So it's that, isn't it, that would to actually break away and think this is conditioning, this isn't me, this is not what I'm thinking.
And that's why it's so important to deliberately create the environment around us that enables us to not be like everyone else, not listen to the news and fill our mind with all the fear that they design, right? The news is designed to appear to our amygdala, the part of our brain that likes and is looking out for risk and fear, and actually not pay attention to that and deliberately create an environment where we're surrounding ourselves and filling our minds with great books like this, where we can learn and actually step up and grow.
And it goes even further than that, doesn't it? Because it talks about recognizing your feelings. So why are you feeling that fear? And what does that fear feel like? And how is it different to, how do you know it's fear? And, you know, as opposed to excitement, for example, which are very similar when you analyze it. I thought that was really quite interesting.
Yeah, that was a great point, wasn't it? He says the chemicals in your body of fear and the chemicals in your body of excitement are actually exactly the same. The difference is the breath. In fear, we're not breathing properly. In excitement, you know, we might be holding our breath, it's so important to turn that fear and make it excitement. And if you can love that feeling rather than fear it, then you'll get further in life. I know an awful lot of entrepreneurs just get used to feeling uncomfortable, and they get used to the excitement and fear of not quite knowing what's going to happen next, but being happy to be courageous about it and just see what happens and go with the flow.
And it's okay to have fear. And I think that's something that as coaches we sort of help people with, that's okay, that's normal. People do have fear. It's
all the time. Yeah. It makes me think of Susan Jeffers, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. But it is a really good point that he brings up about observing the thought and the feeling rather than being it. Yeah. And that's a very profound point that most people completely miss. Most people are very unconscious about life and they're just reacting to what's going on. But when you step back and you observe the thought or you observe the feeling, as you've alluded to, that's where you can make a decision from a position of power, of non-judgment. And that's where you're empowered to do something about it. So, yeah. What else really stood out for you, Kevin, in this book?
Well, you know, I like process. So breaking it into the four zones. So the zone of incompetence, the zone of competence, the zone of excellence, and then the zone of genius. And how the first three are like boxes, but how when you get to the zone of genius, then you're just flying.
Describe a bit more about that, because I think that was one of the concepts that takes a bit of deep thinking, I think, to get. And I think it's difficult for someone who hasn't ever necessarily been in flow, really loved what they're doing. How do they know, or how do they get to that zone of excellence and then beyond that to the zone of genius?
That's a really good question. And I'm trying to recall that part of the book.
Just as a thought that springs to mind for me, I remember one of my first coaches, actually when I was doing my coach training back in 2012, he said, what is a perfect day for you? What is it that excites you and you love and makes you feel really alive? Because that's a sign that you should be doing more of that.
I remember that.
And
conversation only this morning
we did this, so we're walking down the beach, we were actually trying to have that conversation and coach each other into that. What is it that when you get up in the morning that it's just really exciting you about the day, as opposed to the dread and the obstacles and the churn that you sometimes have to go through when you're not in that zone of genius. So it is that excitement, that freedom, that enjoyment. It's all of those things, isn't it? Where you just loving what you're doing. It's certainly not a job. It's something that you just love filling your time, filling your day with.
When time stands still for you, or you don't notice the time flying by.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think that is for you then, Sally?
For me, I think it's coaching. It's helping people. Time just absolutely, if I'm helping someone in any way, that time just flies past. It's just, I love it. I really come into being, and I realize I'm doing it. I'm doing things and saying things that just flow out from me. Yeah. I couldn't, you know, if I sat there and thought about what do I say, I couldn't think of it. But when I'm in that flow, it's just coming out.
Yeah. Ditto for me. I had three coaching calls this morning and it was just like, wow, this is energizing. I love it. The results and the changes that they're making is phenomenal. And it's about being present as well, isn't it? Because we're not thinking about the future or the past at that moment. We're thinking about exactly what we're doing and what we're helping them with, and just being entirely focused on them and listening that enables us to be, in flow. So the listeners then, Kevin, what can they do to help them discover their zone of excellence and zone of genius?
I think you have to engage with somebody else to actually have those conversations. Someone that you know, like, and trust, that you can really get into having a conversation to dig deep, to try and understand what it is that when you are in flow. You know, think about when you are in those situations, what are you doing when you are enjoying life and when everything just becomes a breeze and suddenly the day has gone by without even realizing it? What were you doing during that day?
It's so true, because it's so easy for us to see other people's genius, other people's brilliance, and yet they can't see it. They're like, what do? I'm trying to do this stuff in property and I haven't got any skills and I haven't done property before and I've got no value to bring. And we're going, you're sitting on a mountain of gold. What are you on about? Look at this and this. And it takes someone else to show them that. And that's, I know that.
And the confidence part, because often it'll be, I can't do that. I'm not very confident in doing that. And you turn it round and say, well, okay, actually it's not you, it's somebody, it's the situation or something like that. So that gives them the confidence. I had a coaching call only last night, was saying, I have no self-confidence. And as we dug deeper, it was the fact that they were actually quite realistic and quite, on the ball as to what was happening. It's the other person that they were dealing with
was projecting it.
That was shifting it and making it them feel it's on them. So it's that kind of thing. Often we don't realize what we're really good at, and we need someone else to actually show or bring it out of us.
Yes.
That confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a problem shared is a problem halved. I think it's so good to always talk to someone about whatever problem you perceive, because within the problem lies the seed of something amazing for you to grow from. One of the other things that really resonated with me, it was just quite short within the book, but he did mention it a couple of times, and that's around affirmations. Mm-hmm. Now, I used to do affirmations back many years ago, and I did them for a long time, and I didn't really necessarily believe them. And yet, I look today, and I'm living everything that I affirmed to myself 10 years ago. So I would say, guys, listeners, whatever you want, keep affirming it to yourself. Bombard your subconscious with what you want to have happen in your life, and believe it and feel it as if it's already happened. And that's when you'll start to see changes. But you've got to feel it. That feeling is the resonance, and we'll talk about that in another podcast sometime. But the vibration, that feeling, is what makes it manifest in your life.
Believe in yourself is what it comes down to, isn't it?
It does. And it's easier said than done when things aren't going well. But absolutely, it's that self-belief, because we are creating and projecting the world around us. It's not happening to us. It's happening for us, and we're making it. So actually, empowerment is where it's at. Great. OK. And any final thoughts on the book that you wanted to touch on or share with the listeners?
Einstein Time.
About taking control of your time. Don't blame other people or whatever. I haven't got time for that or whatever. It's about you taking control. You're in control of time.
So there's let's delve a little bit deeper into that. So people do time management courses. They think that if I do it in this way, then it will get better and I'll be more productive, blah blah blah. And it works maybe for a little while, and then it goes back to their old ways. What is Einstein time to someone who lives in it?
So we've all got the same amount of time. It's about how we use it. And it's about also what's important to us in that time. And it's interesting because I've really been examining myself about time. I'm a great one for saying I haven't got much time to do this or whatever. And then I've realized, no, it's about, is this important enough now to do, to put the time on, to spend the time on it? Mm-hmm. Or is it something that I can just put back because it's not important? So it's about prioritizing what you're doing with your time and how it works. And we go back to the thing about the thing that we like to do, we do, you know, the time just disappears. It's the things that we don't like to do, the time is dragging or whatever. And it's the same amount of time, but it's about understanding you are in control of your time and how you use it. And sometimes we make excuses because we're about lack of time, because we just don't want to do it.
And sometimes we don't focus on just spending, say, 90 minutes a day actually working on things that are going to move our business forward, you know, make those calls to the estate agents, get the landlord letters out, all those things that seem to be massive blocks to doing it for some people, but actually they're the one thing or the two, three things that are going to move your business forward. Mm-hmm. So do that first, and then you can look at all your emails for the rest of the day, and you'll actually feel fine doing that stuff that's not moving your business forward, because you've spent time during the day moving your business forward. Mm. If that makes sense.
He definitely talks about not just control, but creating the time. Yeah. Yourself, because you are always creating it. And even for people who might be, in terms of wealth dynamics, you know, lords, accumulators, and even traders and mechanics, they don't necessarily create, or they might not think they create all that much, but actually they create process. They create systems. They create a rhythm to what needs to happen in order for things to move ahead. So when is that creative time for you? When is that Einstein time? When does that Einstein time happen for you guys?
For me, it's bizarrely in the mornings. Mm-hmm. I would have never been a morning person, but I love the mornings, which is that kind of strange conflict. So once I'm out of bed, it's fine. So we've got into the habit now for quite some months of getting up, getting out and walking out onto a nice walk in the morning. And it's that time when the morning is quiet, the day's young, that you just let your thoughts flow. And that's when my Einstein time is. Mm. You haven't got the clutter of the day going on in your head. And other times we felt as well, just getting out and going for a walk just allows you to free your mind and just solve problems just by being in a different environment.
Yeah. And what about you, Sally?
Well, yeah, mornings have always been something for me, but it is about changing my environment. So if I feel that I need to take time out or I need some time for something, it's not really a particular time of the day or anything like that. It's about changing environment. And that can be anything, can be anywhere and anything. Just go and change what the environment I'm in.
Yeah. Those are two great tips for the listeners, because first thing in the morning when your brain is fresh is great. And two, as you say, the environment. And we only need to look back at some of the case examples of history when is it Newton in the bath or is it below the tree with the apple on his head? I forget. Anyway, but the point is they weren't in a work environment and they were usually out in nature. And it might have been, last thing at night if you're a night owl, or it might be first thing in the morning if you're more of a morning person. But it's, when you're out and your thoughts are just flowing, that the best insights come to you. Mm. And that's why I absolutely love either going for a walk or a run every day. And those are the times when I get the best flickers of genius, even if I do say so myself, the flickers of genius of the best ideas that come to me and go, that's what I need to do next on this bit in order to, and it's, you know, the 80-20 rule, that one idea actually makes a huge difference potentially to the rest of your life, or certainly to, you know, the project that you might be working on at the time.
So you're allowing your brain, your mind to just flow, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And if anything, you're almost tapping into the superconscious, yeah, which is something, yeah, we can talk about another time as well, of because we are all connected. And so it's allowing thoughts to flow, and that's when the best ideas suddenly emerge.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, it's certainly one of my favourite books. I've recommended it to many people, and they've all had great outcomes from it, because it's about you. It's about you being the best version of yourself, and stop limiting yourself to being small and actually step into your true genius, which you are, because everyone is a genius. It's just you mustn't measure yourself against other people. Measure yourself against your former self, if anything. Mm. Any closing comments from you, Kevin?
That's a really good point, actually, is measuring yourself against your former self. Then you actually see how far you have come and the person that you used to be compared to the person you are now. And then you can see where you want to get to as well.
Yeah.
So just measuring that and keeping track of the progress that you've made is really powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it goes back to what I was saying you when you asked me about my upper limiting belief or whatever earlier, and I was saying about when I was younger. And looking back at that, how I've left that behind and sort of moved on from that as a person and business and everything. And it's looking back and realizing then, and it's only recently I've realized that upper limiting belief that I had.
Cool. Excellent. Great. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking about this book to you both, and hopefully the listeners have got some nuggets out of it as well. It does make me think of so many other books that we could be talking about, including The Gap and the Gain, which is, I think, is very relevant to your parting comment just there, Kevin. So maybe we can do that next. But yeah, please like, share, comment, leave your thoughts. It would be great to get your feedback and input on this vlog. And yes, thank you very much for listening.
Great, right. Great to be
talk
here.
To you all soon.
Yeah, speak soon. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.